Hello and you're very welcome to ADAPT Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Claire O'Connell, and today we're talking to the new director of the ADAPT Centre, Professor John Kelleher.
From the ADAPT Centre at Trinity College, this is ADAPT Radio, presenting groundbreaking innovations, one conversation at a time.
I think if people are open to new ideas and open to learning, then exciting things can happen, because the exciting things often happen at the margins. So once you can build a bridge across a discipline, then you can do really exciting work. And that's one of the aspects of work that I'd like to champion over the next few years at ADAPT.
It's an exciting time for AI. The pace of change is beyond rapid. And it's an exciting time for research in Ireland. And now, Professor John Kelleher is taking the reins as the new director of ADAPT, which is, of course, the SFI Research Centre for AI-driven Digital Content Technology. Congratulations, John, and you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much. Delighted to be here.
John, you are Chair of Artificial Intelligence at Trinity College Dublin, and between now and 2026, you will be directing the ADAPT Centre. What does the appointment of director mean to you?
So on a personal level, it means a huge amount to me. I've been on a long journey with the community that's now the ADAPT Centre. I started back working in this area when CNGL was the Centre for Next Generation Localization. This was back in, for me, I started there in 2005. At that point, I was in DIT, Dublin Institute of Technology, what's now TU Dublin, what has become TU Dublin. So I started off as an external collaborator working in CNGL. From there, DIT eventually became a partner in ADAPT, where I was a funded investigator, and then I became a PI, and then I became a theme lead, then a strand lead in ADAPT 2, and a principal investigator, and now I've been appointed to director. So it's been a long journey, a very supportive one. And for me, having come through that journey, I take on the role of the director. I take it very seriously, and I take it on with a lot of gratitude because of the people who have supported me through my journey. And I think that will inform how I try to behave as a director, to try and support other people in the same way, to have the same perspectives of openness and mentoring and support for people coming through. So I'm really excited by the role, but at the same time, I feel a lot of responsibility, a sense of stewardship. And I'm hoping to continue the great work and to maintain and help the culture that's there to continue. So, and that culture of openness and support, collegiality, and respect for each other. Those would be the key words that are on my mind as I come into the role.
Brilliant. And, you know, you say yourself, you've had a long journey to get here. You've been in the field for quite a while. But I think the pace of change in the field of AI has just become almost unprecedented, hasn't it? I remember you were giving a talk at an event recently and you had said you hadn't wanted to finalize your slides until that morning because otherwise what you were talking about could have been out of date. So, I mean, what has surprised you most maybe in the last year of that pace of change in AI?
So I think it's been incredible, the pace of change as you talk about it. It's hard to believe that it was just over a year ago that ChatGPT came out. And I suppose that would dominate anybody's perspective over the last year because there were trends that led up to that. One of the things about this wave of AI, because AI has come in multiple waves, but one of the differentiators in this wave is this would be the one where AI is really coming into people's lives, the popularity of its use. There's a range of jobs that are being affected by AI and will be affected by AI that people for a long time thought wouldn't be, you know. Yeah, so if you were to ask me what was the most surprising thing in the last year, it would have to have been the release and popularity of ChatGPT. I've been working with that technology for a long time, language models. It's interesting to see how scaling making models bigger in some way it seems to make them different. But then we're on a very interesting, as I say that, but we're still on a very interesting learning trajectory with these models because it seemed to be making them bigger was the way to go, but now there's very interesting work on figuring out how to train them in a sustainable and efficient manner. And there's lots of interesting work going on there. So I think another trend that comes through with that, maybe the background is in some ways, from a computer scientist point of view, a return to traditional questions in computer science about complexity theory and Bigot notation. This would be a terminology like that, where we look at the time and space complexity of algorithms. How long does it take to train something? How much memory do you need? these factors have come to the fore again in the last 12 months. You know, there was a time where maybe they weren't as core in artificial intelligence because people were assuming you'd always have enough computer power to deal with whatever you want. But now as the models got bigger and bigger, those questions have come to the fore again. So it's a strange blend for me in terms of, on the one side, the breakthroughs in terms of public perception of AI has come to the foreground, and the fluency that these systems bring, which have been surprising. Then on the other side, a return to some of the core questions of computer science that have always been there. It's an interesting blend. Very exciting times. And again, going back to the pace, I think what comes along with the uptake and the impact and penetration of AI into people's lives is that there's so much interest from industry in artificial intelligence. And that's really driving the pace. You know, so academia and industry are working very closely in this area. Adapt is one, is an excellent platform, an exemplar of how that happens. Yeah, that I think makes this area of academia work moving even faster than other places and other areas and disciplines and fields. So really exciting time. Yeah.
And it is a very rich area of research for Adapt, and Adapt is very well positioned to carry out this kind of research. Are there any projects in particular that you see as groundbreaking here in Adapt?
Yes, I have to say there's a good few. So one of them that I'm really excited about that's actually just finishing now, but I hope that the team stay together and they get to continue, is the Sign-On project. So this is one area where I think, I hope that artificial intelligence has a real benefit. So the Sign-On project was developing technology to improve and help communication between the hearing and the deaf and hard of hearing community. They're developing systems to go to do sign language recognition and translation. One of the exciting things actually about artificial intelligence is that the kind of neural networks, these fundamental building blocks, are so flexible and they can be tailored to different types of data, and we can make these multimodal systems. So it's really fascinating. And what's driving a lot of this interest is that these neural networks can learn representations, intermodal representations between sign language and text. People would have seen that if they use Midjourney or those systems like DALL-E 2, where you put in text and you get an image out. It's that mapping from one modality to another that these models can learn that make them so adaptable and interesting. And the Sign-On project, where we're going from what would have been traditionally two different fields, computer vision on the one side and artificial intelligence and natural language processing on the other, where we're using computer vision to recognize sign language and then to map that directly to language and vice versa, that intermodal linkage these neural networks enable, I think is really exciting. And I think the Sign-On project is a really great example of how that technology can be used, hopefully, to improve accessibility to systems. That would be an area I'd be very excited about, in how artificial intelligence, through its fluency, the abilities of these systems to improve interactions with computers, will open up digital technology to a broader sector of society by improving the naturalness and ease of interactions between people and digital technologies.
Am I right in thinking that the Sign-On project is led by Professor Andy Way in DCU?
Yes, so Professor Andy Way coordinates it. Yep, that was up in DCU. Yes, exactly, that's the project. Yep.
And they won a big award at the Research Summit recently as well, I think.
We got the Engaged, the SFI, Science Foundation Ireland Engaged Research Award. And I think that's a really strong signal of how strong the project was. They worked very closely with the stakeholders and the communities that were involved. I think Lorraine Leeson was one of the PIs on the project who helped to build those connections, because when a technology starts impacting on people's lives, it's really important that those people, those communities, are involved not only in the kind of the reception of the technology, but also in its how it's conceived, designed, and created throughout that whole process. And I think that the Sign-On project is a really strong example of that type of participatory research, where the groups that the technology is being designed with and for are part of the process from the very beginning. And that was reflected in the award that they got. Yeah,
absolutely agree. Looking to the future, AI is promising to transform the world, But sometimes that's in ways that don't necessarily seem for the better. Things around the future of work, disinformation, surveillance, bias, etc. How do you see ADAPT's role in mitigating this?
So ADAPT, I think, is contributing to the mitigation of those processes in a range of different ways. So on the one side, ADAPT has an incredibly strong EPE program. And Laura and the team do, I'm always inspired by the work they do.
So this is education and public engagement.
The education and public engagement team. So their work on digital literacy, and we're broadening that to algorithmic and media literacy. So that work's incredibly important. When these types of technologies are prevalent and throughout society, it's important that the people in that society understand what they are and how they work. So that's, I think, would be at a very core, fundamental, base level, help people to mitigate the risks and challenges around this technology, first by educating people. But then at another level, we also work with standards and policy work. And one of the, as you rightly pointed out, there's a range of challenges around these technologies. And that means that these technologies are moving into an area where they're going to be regulated more and more. You've seen that the AI Act is just being passed. Now, we have had, in ADAPT, going back to 2014 and 15, we had the Ethics and Privacy Working Group was set up a long time ago in ADAPT, and that's blossomed into a range of research in AI ethics. In fact, one of the three main strands in ADAPT, transparent digital governance, deals with data governance, algorithmic governance, AI ethics. So it's right at the core of the ADAPT's mission. And we do a lot of work both with policymakers and doing the standards area. So Dave Lewis, for example, who has done an incredible job as the director of ADAPT over the last year, has been working very for a long time now in standards and supporting Irish research in the standards area. So at those two different levels, obviously we do our research projects as well. We have this core mission of excellence in kind of technical research and foundational AI research. And I've spoken to that a little bit on the Sign-On project. But thinking beyond those and more broadly, how we impact on these risks and challenges, I think education, public engagement, and policy are two other areas I'd highlight.
So you have that sort of bottom-up approach of empowering people with literacy and awareness around AI and its capabilities and the potential, I suppose, for harm as well. And you also have more that top-down approach of policymaking, regulation, and you know, trying to keep things in line at that level as well. And in between that, you have the research, cutting across that, you have the research.
Yeah, so we have that type of a sandwich model, as you said out there. And I think that's important because the risks are different at different levels as well. So the risks, how they impact people and the risks that a society faces versus the risks that an individual faces. Sometimes they align, sometimes they differ. And that sort of reflects the fact that there's always a tension between individual freedom versus stability and security within a society. That's a really challenging space. And we have, you know, that's not necessarily a space that a computer scientist like myself should be going into without support and following some of the experts. But the reason why I bring that up is that's why it's important for us to educate individuals, but also work at a policy level, society. And where that goes to as well, I think, is some other really interesting projects we're doing. So in terms of the research, if I think about, there's the Vigilant Project, which Brendan Spillane, Professor Brendan Spillane from UCD, and Professor Owen Conlon from GCD are involved in, who are looking at mis and disinformation and how to identify that. Because one of the challenges that society faces is the breakdown in our sphere and our ability to have open discussions and debates about the challenges that we have, that we're becoming more polarized, some of the challenges around social media. So debunking conspiracy theories and trying to identify echo chambers, empowering people to understand when they're in an echo chamber and where the information they receive comes from, fact-checking. There's a whole range of challenges there. I think this is one of the interesting aspects of all technology is that, most technology, that it both can be, poison and a cure insofar as an AI, I think, is certainly in that space and big data is in that space. So the idea that done well, it can help to mitigate some of the challenges that that arise from its misuse. And I think that's what we're trying to try to get the balance right. And we're trying to rebalance or intervene to ensure that the best parts of AI come to the fore to support individuals and society.
Something that, you know, is starting to really come to the fore in research, and we're seeing this particularly in Ireland at the moment, we're going to see the development of a new agency tied to Erin, which is all about multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary research, people working together, etc., which is that a lot of that will need to happen more probably during your tenureship as director. So what are your thoughts on that? How do you bring more people into these projects? You've already talked about engaging with stakeholders and the need to talk to policymakers, etc. What about broadening out the academic sphere as well of the research that you'll be doing in ADAPT?
Yeah, so I think that's fundamentally important for what we first in delivering our mission and our vision. I've already pointed on the fact that as a computer scientist, I shouldn't pretend to be an expert on all topics, and I need to work with other people. The interdisciplinary work is exciting but challenging, and it's challenging because at a fundamental level, academics who have developed in different disciplines often speak different languages. So I think one of the things that I think is really important within ADAPT culture more generally is our commitment to respect and peer esteem. And as a result, we start nearly all our meetings now with a statement around using language to build bridges. And that's important just so that people are treated with respect, but it's also important in interdisciplinary research because the most important aspect or the foundations we need to build in order for interdisciplinary research to flourish is that we can communicate across disciplines. So we need to spend time with each other as researchers, understanding each other's language. And at the core of that is a willingness to listen. So active listening is something I try to do. I try to listen and learn and be open to other people's perspectives. Then I think if people are open to new ideas and open to learning, then exciting things can happen, because the exciting things often happen at the margins between disciplines, where people come together in a complementary team where they have complementary expertise. So once you can build a bridge across a discipline, then you can do really exciting work. And that's one of the aspects of work that I'd like to support and champion over the next few years at ADAPT.
I'm really heartened to hear you say that, because I think a lot of people underestimate the amount of time and effort it takes to build those bridges and how people can really be looking at the same problem in two fundamentally different ways. And you need to give people the time and space to find that commonality and that, as you say, liminal space where the really good stuff happens and people can solve problems together. In terms of mentoring people as well, because obviously we have a cohort of young, early stage, talented researchers, how do you see them being resourced and supported into the future as well?
Yes, so that comes at two or three different levels. So on the first is, as you say, resourcing. Can we resource people? Can we enable them to have a good standard? Dublin, Ireland is an expensive place to live. Can we address those challenges about the cost of living crisis? Because no matter how intelligent or smart you are, it's impossible to do good research unless you have some type of security for you to think about the future. So we'll work very hard on that. That's not something we can always solve by ourselves. You have to work with government around that, and I certainly do whatever I can. And that's across, I think it's both the researchers and the research professionals and the operations team in the center. We also need to consider in that factor, because the center doesn't work without the operations team and the research professionals supporting it. They're incredibly important as well. So I think it's very important to flag their role and contribution, and that they are part of this discussion as well when we talk not only about resourcing, but also mentoring, because there's careers that have to be developed and supported there. So that's on one side, is there's a resourcing side. And then on the other, I'd come back to the word culture. So the culture that we have, I believe, at the moment is inclusive, excellent, and open. The reason I use the word I believe is that I want to highlight that I'm open to people, you know, talking to me about that and letting me know how we can build on and improve and strengthen anything. You know, we have Marguerite Barry and the JEDI team and the EDI team have been doing incredible work. They're preparing a survey, I think, of the community that will be going out soon. So I look forward to getting the responses from that and working with Marguerite to see how we can improve the culture that we already have. We have a great basis, I believe, but we're always working to improve and be more open and inclusive. So those are two sides, resourcing and culture. And then finally, having a vision for excellence, for having a growth mindset. What I mean by that is by focusing on the process and trying to improve your process and how you do things, both as a center, but as a researcher. And then if you try to get the best process you can, then hopefully the outcomes will take care of themselves. So that would be my advice there in terms of, it's a challenging industry. It's very competitive, AI, the sector. And sometimes things mightn't necessarily work for you the first time. So that's why to try and be resilient and robust, I try and focus on, have I done what I can? Have I managed what I can control? And through that, trying to do your best and also to think about how you are doing on your journey. So everybody is on a separate journey. And sometimes it can be disheartening if you pick out the best person ever in the world, you know, if you compare yourself to maybe Jeffrey Hinton or something like that in the AI field, who's, you know, they've had a different life journey. So we want to support people on their journey, and not everybody's destination is the exact same. And we want to be open to support them across their destinations and to give them a vision and resourcing and a culture that allows them to flourish.
Brilliant. Now, I know we've mentioned that the pace of change in AI is extremely rapid. Do you look far forward at all? I mean, how might our lives differ in 10 years? Can we even think that far ahead?
Yeah, sometimes it's incredible to roll back 1 year. I think when I try to look further ahead, sometimes it's useful to look at different areas. Because I think that the impacts of AI will be very different in different fields. So, for example, education, AI is having a massive impact there, partly because the students are using it. You know, it's not a top-down process there in education. It's just students are using it and we're going to have to keep up. And there's lots of positives there. But trying to find the balance between where it's appropriate, where it isn't, how do we support educators at all levels, both to give them knowledge. We'll go back to the EPE discussion we had earlier on education and public engagement with Laura and Emma and Darren, those teams, and to grow that edge so that people have the appropriate literacy and to understand these tools, understand how they're used, but then also to resource them with the tools so that they have the tools they need so that they can hit the learning objectives that they're trying to get across in the classroom. And to refine, for example, or to hone in on maybe what we do need to teach, you know, in terms of critical analysis, creativity, those aspects. Because maybe one of the things that's changed in the last year for ourselves is not so much just the technology, but also an understanding of what it is that's distinctive about being human. So these tools are very fluent. You know, the language, they can generate very fluent language, which is surprisingly believable. And I think that has made us reevaluate that maybe fluency in and of itself isn't the sign of intelligence that we thought it was before. And that's why maybe we need more emphasis on creativity and critical thinking within education. But I think that's been going, people have been trying to do that for a long time. So this will just put more impetus behind that. And then if I switch from education to an area like computer science, software programming, you know, how programming is about to be done in the industry and thought looks like, if you look at Copilot and those tools right now, there's a lot of research going on in ADAPT because it's very similar technology to machine translation, where we have been a world leader for years, now going from language to source code generation. So how programming is done is likely to be very different in the next 5-10 years. And then going back to education, how we train computer scientists to do coding and programming, which has always been the staple of computer science, one of the staples. So that's going to change radically. And then coming across, then first reflect in the culture, creative and cultural industries. Things are radically changing there. Like I had a wonderful experience last year where I did a creative writing workshop, and we used AI as to help people do creative writing. They used a fine-tuned variant of a GPT language model as a co-writer or a peer writer for somebody doing creative writing. So I think that opened my eyes up into how AI done right or done well can amplify and support human creativity, sometimes in giving people the confidence to do something that they mightn't feel comfortable doing by themselves. So if it's your first time to do creative writing and you don't know where to start or you don't know where to go next, having an AI to give you a prompt that you may not agree with, but it gives you something to think about and move forwards. So those aspects there where an AI can be, you know, a partner, you know, and it's a bottom up. And if you think about the culture and creative industries, and then you go over to health, which is a much more highly regulated area, much more top down. So, and where accuracy is hugely important and the provenance and the explainability of the result is really important. So a whole set of different challenges there. I'm working on an EU project at the moment called Validate, where we're looking at how do we exactly address those challenges of explainability and the validation of a process, and how when you have things like, we may not centralize all the data in one place and you need to do federated learning, how do you assure data quality across a federation of systems? And how do you ensure that the system, once it's retrained, how is that revalidated at a level that's appropriate for a medical context, like an acute care context? So there's a whole range of challenges there that may not be as important in the cultural and creative industries, where it's more about, you know, becoming a partner to amplify human creativity. So thinking to the future, I think it's definitely going to have an impact. It's going to have an impact. AI is going to have an impact, and digital technologies will have an impact across all our lives, but it will have a different scale of impact in different sectors. And I think to the future, that's the thing that comes to my mind.
So yeah, absolutely. Exciting times with a lot of philosophy and nuance along the way. Thank you so much, Professor John Kelleher, for joining us today. Congratulations on your new role of Director of ADAPT, and all the best with that as well. And wishing you all the best for 2024.
Thank you very much.
If you would like to find out more about Professor John Kelleher and the work that ADAPT does, I've put some links into the show notes, so please do go and check them out. To get new episodes of ADAPT Radio automatically, just click the follow button on your player. Until next time, from myself, Claire O'Connell, Sláinte, and thank you for listening.
The ADAPT Radio podcast is brought to you by the ADAPT Centre at Trinity College Dublin. Find out more about their extensive research work at adaptcentre.ie. Join us next time to hear about more groundbreaking innovations. To get new episodes automatically, just click the follow button on your player right now. The ADAPT Radio podcast is produced by dustpod.io, with episodes monthly on Apple, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.